Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and international expert agrohomeopath Kavi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm speaking today with our co-host, Kavi Raj, author of the international bestseller, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden, which has been translated into 7 languages, and hopefully Dr. Bruck will also be able to get on the line with us. He is a North Carolina State University professor of environmental science and technology and a plant pathologist. So today is February 16th, 2011. You're listening to show number 17 of How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens. And sometimes I want to insert that word, grow great organic gardens. And thank you to all those folks who are listening out there. Our quote for today, which is something that I should have probably talked about on last week's show, which was all about wine. Wine gives a man nothing. It only puts in motion what has been locked up in frost. And that is a quote from Samuel Johnson, an English poet, critic, and writer. He lived during the 1700s, 1709 to 1784. Let me see if Kavi Raj is on the line.
Yes.
Okay, you can hear me. Great. I'm going to do a little bit more of the intro. We're going to kind of review, I thought, what we talked about last week. We defined pesticides last week, and we learned that it covered many more organisms than just insects. The regulatory control of pesticides, the difficulties in getting natural pesticides to market. Mark Moody was with us yesterday, and he explained that aspect of it, and the harm that chemicals do to the earth and the environment. Mark Moody also told us the root of pesticides comes from the word suicide, and that was quite fascinating to me, and that we can do, it can do not only to the pest, but it can also do harm to humans, our pets, other plant life, and our environment. We must remember that a pesticide is an agent used to kill or control any pest, and pests can be, included are insects, rodents, birds, unwanted plants such as weeds, fungi, or microorganisms such as bacteria and viruses. Though often misunderstood to refer only to insecticides, the term pesticides also applies to herbicides, fungicides, microbicides, rodenticides, and various other substances used to control pets. And there's a lot more that we talked about last week regarding pesticides. It's quite an involved subject. And we also learned that biodynamic farmers are searching, developing, and using natural means to live in harmony with the earth. We discussed the intensive type of farming and pesticide use for growing grapes in the vineyards, and we hope to see more growers implement organic farming practices that are ecologically sustainable. Today, we will be talking about preparing your garden for the upcoming spring planting with Kavi Raj, and he will get us started today with an introduction.
Yes. First of all, if you prepare your garden, you can speed things up in a sense. You can use the cold frame, which is actually a wooden box or sometimes made of concrete, with the back wall higher than the front, on which you lay glass windows. And underneath, you can germinate all kinds of seeds that you want to plant out later as little seedlings. yeah, which will then, of course, make your garden instantly green. Yeah, the moment that you say, okay, now the frost is over, spring has come, now we can plant everything out. But before that, already it is warm, warm enough during the day for you to germinate your seeds in the cold frame if you don't have a greenhouse. And the cold frame can be kept warm at night by putting plastic bottles full of water against the back wall. And then they get warmed by the sun. And then at night you will not have any frost in the cold frame.
Okay. So we have to ask somebody else who's drinking soda pop to get us those plastic bottles, because I don't drink any and I don't have any. How do we get those plastic bottles?
Yeah, well, you know, you can always go to a recycling place. Yeah.
Okay.
Many drinks are sold in plastic bottles anyway, even fruit juices.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that, apple juice or something you can get in a. Okay.
Yeah.
I imagine you could even use glass bottles if you have them.
Exactly. Glass bottles would actually be better.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a positive.
Yes, that's a positive. On the other hand, you know, if you put one bottle, one plastic bottle inside the other, yeah, by cutting open the side and you stick it inside, then you have an extra insulation wall which maintains the temperature. And that is what you cannot do with the glass bottle.
Okay. That's fascinating. We're going to have to see a demo of that.
Yes. Well, there are actually demos of that found on the internet. I shall next week present a nice URL for that, because right now I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we can see how this is done.
Wonderful. I have a question. When you're planting in this cold frame, I'm thinking about transplant shock. Do we just fill it with soil, or do we put little potting peat pots or something so that when we transplant?
The best way, of course, is using little peat pots, yeah, because then you can take them out and plant them directly in the soil. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You must always know very well what you also seed next to each other, because some plants have an influence on other plants and they don't seed well together. And then you say, oh, these seeds are no good. No, the seeds are perfect, but the wrong seed has been placed next to another one. Yeah, so in that way you have things that you plant together. Yeah. And that you seed together, because by seeding them together, you will get better results already. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, legumes like peas and beans and clover, they have the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen for their own use and for the benefit of the plants that grow next to them through a symbiotic relationship. Yeah. And that is, this relationship comes about from rhizobium bacteria. Yeah,
rhizobium.
Rhizobium. Bacteria. Yes.
Okay, rhizobium bacteria. So that's something that is a bacteria that works with the rhizome. Tell me what that is.
The rhizome, that's a bacterium that actually transports nitrogen through the soil from one plant to the other. Yeah, so in this case, the beans and the peas and the clover, they have nodules under the soil in the roots, and these nodules are full of nitrogen. And these bacteria live off that and transport that through the soil to other plants. Yeah, that have another substance that the bacteria needs, and then by giving off the nitrogen, it can pick up the other substance that the bacterium needs for its own life cycle.
Okay.
That is a symbiotic relationship. It needs the nitrogen for one part of the cycle, and then for the other part, it has to go to another plant to obtain something else in exchange for the nitrogen.
Okay.
And so, in the same way, you can interplant beans with corn or with potatoes, because they like each other. Yeah, they help each other.
Okay.
And you can contact the ATTRA because they have information on rhizobium inoculation. So if you don't have it, yeah, if you don't have these rhizobium bacteria in your soil, they can come and inject some. And then from there, everything multiplies by itself.
Okay. So what do we do next?
Next, when you have planted your seeds, or actually before you plant your seeds, it's good to soak them in a solution with silica, yeah, because then the germination rate goes up to 98-99%. Yeah, whereas otherwise you will always have some loss of seed that does not germinate, and that is usually between the 12-15%. Yeah, that simply does not germinate without silica.
And we can do this for all of our seeds.
You can do that with all of your seeds, and then immediately you will also produce strong seedlings that will not be attacked by slaters or the pill bug, as it is also called. Yeah. That is like a little armadillo.
Yes, they make a little ball.
He rolls himself up to a ball. That's why it's called the pill bug. Then it looks like a pill. And they like to eat seedlings, and so do snails. Yeah. And of course, after you've soaked the seed in silica, and you can keep the snails out of the cold frame. Yeah. Then you're doing quite all right, but the slater can creep in almost through any crack, yeah. And so the pill bug is a bit of a problem there. Now we have a remedy in homeopathy. It's called oniscus.
Before you get to oniscus, can you for those who are newcomers to the show, explain a little bit how they take the silica and provide it for the seeds? And what is the exact process that they use? And
the exact process is that you buy liquid silica 6C, because the 6X is usually not available. Sometimes it is. Some pharmacists still produce that. But the 6C you can also use in liquid form. And then you put 20 drops in a liter. And you give that liter, you give that 50 bangs on the book, yeah, because
50.
you don't want to damage the table or make too much noise. Yeah,
because you can do it outside and make all the noise you want.
So
explain to them this process of succussion is where they tap very, very strongly, as if you took your fist and you pounded it against an open palm. You're pounding.
Yeah.
Very strongly, and making this hit against the solid surface with this liquid. And so you've put the liquid into a liter container, like a jug or a plastic bottle?
A bottle, not in a jug. A jug you can't shake.
Okay.
Yeah, then it comes all out. It's always in the bottle. And the best, I like these 1.5 liter PET bottles. They have very strong bottoms, and they don't crack open. The cheaper ones, they sometimes crack, and then all your work is in vain. Yeah, and it is 1.5 liters, so you fill up 2/3, and then you have your liter, and you have the space to shake it. Yeah, because if the bottle is completely full, then you have no space to shake it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And right.
So,
and go ahead.
Then after you've done that, yeah, then you can put that water in a container and throw all your seeds in there, yeah, overnight. And then the next day you take out the seeds, and you can use that same silica for your next batch of seeds, yeah, so you can keep that. And the seeds that you have taken out have soaked up the water, yeah, and silica is actually... One of the most important elements that the plant needs, because it keeps him upright. It gives him a strong skin, so to speak. Yeah, all the cells will be stronger that grow out of there. Yeah, because without silica, a plant would not even stand upright. And some have such a small amount that all they can do is creep over the ground. or creep up things. Yeah, but they cannot stand upright by themselves. Yeah, and that is because their silica content is low. That has to do with their function, of course. Like for instance, a poison ivy is a vine that climbs up trees. Yeah, and well, you also have poison ivy trees, but. And now we speak about the vine, and the vine needs the support of something else to climb higher. Otherwise, it cannot go there. And so the silica gives the plant the strength to stand upright and makes everything unpalatable and too hard for an insect to bite through.
I see.
Because insects have very small mouths, and they have to penetrate through the skin of the plant in order to be able to get at the juices. Yeah, and if you give the plant silica, then the skin of the plant is so hard that it cannot penetrate. But
that's
some have bigger mouth, and that is then the slater, and the slater can become a problem, just like the snail. And for that we have Oniscus remedy for the slater, and we have Helix Costa for the snail.
Okay, so I have, before we go on to that Oniscus, because I am interested in hearing about it, a little bit more about the silica. We have a couple questions. One is, I'm always concerned that if I soak seeds, that they're going to get moldy. And so you're indicating it's just 24-hour soak and then take them out of the water and put them directly into the soil. And then, okay, because that's my concern was, having mold begin. And then Dr. Bob has come on the line, and he is asking, how do you know if you're overdosing with the silica? So that's a good question. I didn't think of that one.
Well, you would overdose if you would leave it in there too long, or after you've planted it, you give it another dose. Overdosing with homeopathy is only possible if the dose is repeated. Yeah. It is not the amount, as the skeptics have so amply proven for us that homeopathy is safe. You can swallow a whole bottle, and that's the same as swallowing one pill. Yeah, it is but one dose. But if you repeat that every day, then you create humongous problems, and then the mold that you are so afraid of will develop.
Mm-hmm.
Because silica is a remedy that is... one of the main remedies against molds and mildews and all these fungal diseases. Yeah. So if you do a proving, as it is called, if you prove that silica can set up these things by giving repeated doses, then from that we will know that if you give only one dose, no matter how big it is, that you will have the opposite effect. Then it will cure these things or prevent.
Okay, I think that has probably answered Dr. Bob's question. Won't you be proving if you do too much? Yes, I think he explained that. You only give one dose. You soak the seeds in the silica solution over one night, and then you take them out of the water and plant them. So you're not repeating the dosage. You're not giving them a repeat of the silica. Okay,
no.
I think that answers that question. So now, can you tell me again the spelling of Oniscus and what that is?
Oniscus is O-N, yeah, I-S-C-U-S, Oniscus.
Okay.
Yeah, and that is a remedy which is made from the pill bug.
Oh.
Yeah, not all pharmacies carry it, but some do. And at least Ainsworth in London does.
Okay, so
yeah,
Ainsworth in London.
Some pharmacies will make it if you ask them.
Okay.
Yeah, like Helios. Helios should make it because Helios also makes remedies for plants.
Okay, so I'm looking this up. Oniscus acellus, the common woodlouse. That is it? It's one
that
of the largest and most common species of woodlouse in the British Islands. And Western and Northern Europe, 16 millimeters, that's kind of large.
Yeah, it is.
Think about it. And they are flatter than any large wood lice. So it's like a lice that we would find
it's a wood louse.
First...
They call it a wood louse, but it's not really a louse. It is
not
a,
really a louse. Mm-hmm.
It belongs in the order of armadillos.
Wow.
Yeah.
Armadillos.
Yeah, because it has a similar build, and some old scientific names were calling it armadillo, armadillo bug.
Okay. So this
yeah,
is
because
is
it this, it can roll. It has a similar skin as an armadillo. It is all segments. Yeah, that can roll out. Yeah, then he's rolling itself into a ball, and the armadillo can do the same thing. And then the hard outer skin makes him unpalatable or unrecognizable to his enemies. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They think, oh, that's just a pimple, you know, and they walk by. They don't attack it, and also it becomes very difficult for them to penetrate. Whereas the underbelly is very soft.
Wow, this is fascinating. If anybody goes on to the Wikipedia to learn about this wood louse, you can learn quite a bit about their behavior, their reflexes. They're fond of rotting wood, it says, and species found under garden logs. You know how when you lift up that old wooden log, you'll see them crawling all around.
Yes.
And they're very effective decomposers, it says. So we actually need them. In the garden,
yes, we actually need
right?
them, but not in the cold frame, because then they will decompose your little seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that is what you don't want. And the same with snails. Snails are useful; they can eat the weeds for you, but you don't want them on the plants that you grow for your own food. And so, in the same way as the pilbug has been made. Yeah, from a live wood louse. So we have a remedy made from the snail, that will control both the snail and the slug. Yeah, in the sense that when you give it to the plant becomes unpalatable for them.
What's the name of that remedy?
And that is Helix Tosta.
Okay.
Toasted snail. Helix is snail. Tosta, toasted. They have taken the shell and heated the shell up in an oven at 480 degrees, that it goes completely gray and powdery.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, the remedy was made out of that.
Well, how do we know when to apply these? I mean, we don't want to just do it haphazardly. You're telling us we can start all of the seeds with the silica, but if it's not necessary, when would we want to apply either the Helix Tosta or go ahead.
At the moment that the pilbug comes in, you will find your little seedlings laying flat on the earth, and you know they have been broken into, so to speak. Yeah, that is just later. And then of course you immediately give the remedy, and the slaters will go. Yeah, with the snail. The snail always waits, eating something till the leaves are big enough, because it likes to eat the leaves. Yeah, it's much more succulent and easy to digest. Yeah, so they wait till that time. If one morning you come out and all of a sudden you see a big hole in your leaf, or a whole piece of the leaf has disappeared, then you can be sure the snail's there. And if you look at the underside of the leaves, you may even find them. Because that's where they hide during the day, and at night they eat up your plants. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see them during the day so much. They have hiding places. They also go under stones, because they're as moist and cool. Yeah. Because they don't like the sunshine. So the best thing is always to make sure that you don't have too much stuff lying around your garden, where they can hide during the day. And that is the first thing. And then, of course, the second thing is to look under the leaves and then give the remedy. And don't give the remedy to the weeds, and then they will eat the weeds for you.
Okay, so when we prepare our cold frame, you're saying we place fresh soil? What kind of soil? And you don't want to have anything where these bugs can hide. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah. And so the idea of little pots is good, but it also gives a hiding place for these things. Huh?
Uh-huh.
Because in between they have a cool and damp place where they can hide. Yeah. So if you do it, then I would say that you place the little pot in a tray, which you also fill with earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? But you have still the peat pot in there, and then they have no place to hide in. You understand what I'm saying? There is only then one surface, and that is earth, and there's little to hide.
I'm trying to picture the layers in the cold frame, because I'm thinking that you would have
a cold frame is having only one layer, that is straight on the ground. That's why it's called the cold frame.
Oh, so there's no... is it straight on the ground of earth, or
straight,
is it straight
on the earth.
Okay.
Straight on the earth, and then you... generally, they put a layer of sand in to keep all the weeds out and stuff. Yeah. And on top of that, they have trays in which they place these little pots in which the seed goes, and then, you fill first with potting mix, and then you put your seed in there so that it's just covered. And then you water them, once, and then see, only water the seedling when it is drying out. And because you have soaked them in silica, they retain a lot of water also.
That's true. When you spread out silica, it absorbs water, right?
Mm. Yes. And
okay.
So then when first you get the two four leaf stage, yeah, which are round leaves. They are the leaves of the seedling, and these will drop off. Yeah. After that, you get the regular leaves, and it is when the regular leaves begin to grow that the snails become active.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they go, nice succulent young green stuff. Let's go eat. Yeah.
Right. So we wouldn't just...
Your cold frame, it is a restaurant, and that's why you must make sure that they can't get in. Because any gap, as you know, a snail can go in practically any shape and form. Yeah, any gap, and he will creep through and eat your seedlings.
Kavi, is it not enough just to search for these snails and pick them out and put them
elsewhere? No, because the next night you have a new batch, because they lay eggs everywhere also. Yeah, on the side of the cold frame, in the shady space, they just lay eggs. And then, after a while, these eggs come out, and you think, where are all these snails coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they even lay eggs on the pots, on stone pots.
Well, I've always been taught that you put out a tray with beer in it. And
yeah,
then
you can do that.
Is that a good idea?
Then you kill them all. Why would you want to kill them all? That is the same approach, treat the plant. The plant is having the problem. The snail is only a symptom, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you don't need to do anything about it. You just give the Helix Tosta to the plant, and the problem is over because they won't eat them.
Okay,
why go through all the trouble buying beer, putting it out, and then have the stink of the beer hanging around your garden, and your neighbors thinking, these people have turned into a bunch of drunks.
Okay, yeah. I get the point. Yeah. Okay. What else do we want to learn about either the cold frames or the companion planting of the seeds? Where do you want to go?
I would like to talk a bit more about what grows well together, because if you plant them in there and you don't put the right things next to each other, then you still have no results, and and you have no pests because you have done everything else. Yeah, and then they go, but my plants don't do it. Yeah, so some plants, they exude chemicals from the roots or from their leaves. Yeah, and that suppress or repel pests and protect neighboring plants. Yeah, for instance, the marigold, the African marigold, releases a substance called thiophene, which is a nematode repellent, making it a good companion for a number of garden crops because they are subject to nematodes. Yeah, the nematode likes these garden crops. So the manufacture and release of these biochemicals is also a factor in plant antagonism. Yeah, some plants don't like each other. Yeah, and so we come back to the euglone that is found in the black walnuts. It suppresses the growth of a whole range of other plants, and that creates a problem. Yeah, in home horticulture. Yeah, but it's also a weed suppressor because it inhibits seed germination. Yeah, but it is good for corn. because corn loves it.
To germinate corn, you're saying?
Not only to germinate, to grow it.
Okay. So
yeah.
So the that's J-U-G-L-A-N-S?
Juglone is J-U-G-L-O-N-E.
O-N-E.
That is the substance. And the plant is juglans, J-U-G-L-A-N-S.
Okay.
Juglans nigra.
Okay, and that's the black walnut. And that will actually be a wonderful thing to use as a homeopathic when you're germinating your corn seeds?
Yeah, that is a good one, because you spray it, you plant your corn seeds, and then you spray it with the juglone, and it suppresses all the weeds and stimulates the corn. So the corn will grow faster, bigger, and give you a greater harvest.
Okay, now I don't think about starting corn in a cold frame.
No, that is what you do straight on the field, but corn is seeded a bit later.
Okay, yeah. So what are we going to be putting into our cold frame? I keep thinking about like radishes or something.
Yeah, for instance, some tall-growing, sun-loving plants, they may share space with low-growing, shade-tolerant species, yeah? And so then you get higher yields from anything that you do, yeah? And you have to think about, what do you want to get rid of, yeah? Like in the United States, you may have raccoons, yeah? So if you have prickly vines, yeah, then the raccoons, they don't want to come into your corn, for instance.
Okay.
And if you have plants growing at different heights, yeah, that, for instance, when you grow corn, then it's a companion planted with squash or pumpkins, yeah, because that disorients the adult's squash vine border and protects the vining crop from the damaging pest, yeah.
So we're putting corn together
corn
and
pumpkins or squash together,
okay.
They help each other, yeah, and then the pest cannot find the squash.
Well, my question is, do we start the squash and pumpkin seedlings in the cold frame, and are
you can do that.
They're difficult to transplant.
Yes, so corn is planted directly, and then you bring in the squash from the cold frame.
Okay, and we have to do those in a peat pot. Otherwise, they're not really good for transplant.
No, because then you damage too many air roots, and then, of course, it has a hard time growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you have to grow what fits together. The South American Indians, they had the three sisters, which is potatoes, squash, and corn, or potatoes, beans, and corn. And these three always grow nice together. And so you have many, many other plants that you can use to create a harmonious garden where all these pests and diseases don't really come, yeah? And you have to create beneficial habitats that way, yeah? And benefit is derived when you have the companion plant that provides a desirable environment for insects that are beneficial to your crop and other insects, and especially the predators and the parasitic species, which help to keep the pest populations under control. Yeah. And,
so what do we want to start right
then
now?
Then you plant specific plants in specific places to provide that for the other plants, yeah?
Okay.
So, then the predators hide in those plants, and then your other plants are protected, because as soon as there comes a pest, the predators come from different sides from the plants that you've planted there for that purpose.
You're providing for the pests?
Yes.
You're
providing for the predator.
For the predators?
Yes. Yeah, like ladybirds, lacewings, hoverflies, mantids, robberflies, yeah,
mm-hmm.
and spiders and predatory mites.
And you want them?
No, yeah, those you want because they protect your crop.
Right.
They protect anything that you want to grow for fun or for profit or for eating, yeah.
So if I was to start my cold frame right now, we'll talk about building one in a little bit later, but what's the first thing I'm going to put in there to start at this time?
The first thing that you put in there is sand, so you keep weeds under control. You have a layer of sand in there. And on top of the sand, you can place your trays, yeah, in which you have your peat pots, in which you put your seeds.
Okay. What seeds am I going to select to start?
Well,
as
what do you want to grow?
Let's say I'm a newbie. I haven't done this before. What's the most successful thing that I'm going to see results and to encourage me to continue to do this?
Well, it depends. What do you want to have? You want to have flowers, or you want to have vegetables? Yeah.
That's a good question.
Or you want to grow something else? What do you want to grow? That is the first thing that we have to establish. So some people, mm-hmm. they have their garden because they want to see flowers. So they grow their flowers in the cold frame, and there also you have species that like it together and species that don't like it together. Yeah. I talk mainly about growing vegetables at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about the vegetables. What vegetables?
Well, for instance, you can grow beans, yeah, all beans enrich the soil with nitrogen, yeah, and they fix from the air. In general, they're a good company for carrots, celery, chives, corn, and eggplant. Also, peas and potatoes, brassicas, beets, radish, strawberry, and cucumbers. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's good for heavy nitrogen users like corn and grain plants. Yeah.
Okay.
So French haricot beans.
I'm going to start by putting in any kind of bean that I like, whether it's a white bean, a kidney bean.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example. French haricot beans, sweet corn, and melons, they are a good combination.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you plant here and there a summer savory in between because that deters the bean beetles and improves the growth and the flavor. But don't put onions with them because onions don't like it and they don't like onions with the beans. Yeah. So if you put onion seeds in your cold frame next to the beans, neither of them will grow up because they don't like each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, why do I have this guy? I have to have this guy as a neighbor? Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to put into the cold frame, I'm actually going to start my beans in the cold frame and the melon, but I'm going to wait and plant the corn after frost. I don't know what time of year we start with the corn in the garden. So right now I'm just getting a hold on what I need to get from the store in order to begin my garden.
Well, then you have to get the seeds of the melon, and you have to get your bean seeds and your corn that you want to grow, and then you begin with the beans and the melon in the cold frame, and by the time they have grown up enough that they can be transplanted, that is also the time where you will be able to grow your corn outside already. So then your corn is out of the ground a bit, and then you plant the other ones around it, and the corn will shoot up very quick. And because they like each other, each will stimulate the other in growth. Yeah, because the bean will give the corn the nitrogen that it craves. Yeah?
Okay.
And so then the corn will grow up very fast and provide shade and give space for predators. Yeah, and then the bean and the watermelon will climb up it.
Okay, we'll climb up the stalk of the corn.
Yes, exactly. And so then it becomes one mass of all these different plants, and that confuses the pest. and it gives plenty of space for the predators. So if the pest is coming, then immediately all these predators are on top of it.
So how long will it take for my beans to germinate in time for it to be transplanted into the garden? How am I waiting for like 4 weeks? How many?
Nah, that is a bit long in a month time. That is too long. You know,
okay.
you should actually follow a moon planting guide. Yeah, in which you find the best days for these different things to germinate the seed. Yeah. And you do it on those days, and then you place them in the cold frame or outside. Yeah, if you grow it directly outside later on when it gets warmer. Yeah, and in this way, yeah, then you have the ideal planting time for the plants, and they stimulate each other. Well, better you cannot get. Yeah, but you follow the moon planting guide, because that is more ideal. If you plant your seeds, for instance, at a waxing moon, then they will wait till the moon is waning before they start throwing out roots, because the roots come first, yeah, and they do that best when the moon is waning.
Okay, so we need to look up in our garden guide, the moon planting guide.
Yes.
When is the it's a new moon, and
yeah,
when the moon is starting to get full, and then
yes.
At the halfway point when it's on the wane. Is that where we are not planting at that time?
Well, if it is on the wane and you are about halfway, then of course you can plant, because then you have three four days before it is new moon, and new moon pulls everything down, so that is good for roots. Yeah, and
okay,
if it is waxing, then it is good for leaf, and that is what you will see also. If you could, you can see it actually with hydroponics, that in the period of the waxing moon there is leaf growth, and in the period of the waning moon there is root growth. Yeah, and so the root growth will accommodate for more leaf growth, and so they help each other, because more leaf will bring more sugars to the roots, so they can grow bigger. Yeah.
Okay. So we're gonna need it.
It goes
I'm
in
sorry.
A cycle, yeah, and that cycle follows the moon.
We're going to need a URL link to the moon guide, and maybe
I suggest you give them the URL to Mark Moody's, because that's about the best that I know about.
Considera.org.
Yes, and
so
there they can find the moon planting guide. They can find the planting by the stars.
Okay, we'll get that out.
Okay, and so the pole bean also doesn't like onions, but it doesn't like radish and sunflower and beets and kohlrabi either. Yeah, but it loves corn. Yeah, and summer savory and radish not. Yeah, and the bean.
Can you repeat that again so that I catch?
The pole bean likes corn and summer savory.
Okay.
But it doesn't like onions, radish, sunflower, beets, and kohlrabi.
Okay. So now I need to know what am I going to plant next to my radish if it's not going to go good with the beans?
Well, then we will come to the rabbit, radish. Yeah.
The rabbits would love
it. Let me see. Yeah, the rabbit. let me see. Radish. One moment, please.
Okay.
I'm almost there. PQR.
Yeah, he's looking it up in his book. So we want people to know about his books too.
Yeah, radish are companions for the radish beet, the bush bean. It says here, although before we hear that the bush bean is not compatible. Pole beans, carrots. Yeah, radish and carrots do well together. Chervil, cucumber, lettuce, melons, nasturtium, and parsnip.
I've never had luck with nasturtium. I think they're a beautiful plant.
Okay. And also they go well with peas, spinach, and members of the squash family.
Okay. So I would like to, you know, make a selection of like two or maximum three. I don't want to get in over my head if I'm just doing this as a brand new starter.
So I
would start by soaking my radish, my spinach, and is it too late to plant peas because it's already February and I usually think about planting them in January?
Well, you can still do it.
Okay. So let's say I start peas, and peas don't need to be in the cold frame, do they? Because they're good.
Yeah, you can plant them straight in the cold ground outside.
Right. So we've got the radish, the peas, and the spinach, and we soak them in a silica solution overnight, just one night, and then plant them in the peat pots on the trays in the cold frame. And then we're going to wait until we see...
Say about a week, but now if you do that tonight, then you first look up what is the best time for radish to plant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
You always first refer to the moon guide. And if you have the moon guide, then you know what plants will do well at a certain moon phase. And at that moon phase is when you do your soaking and you're putting in your peat pots. Yeah. And there is always more than one that will do it well at a certain moon phase. So there you can get your varieties. Yeah. And you must then look up in a companion planting guide whether they like each other or not. And if they don't like each other, don't put them next to each other. Put them at another end of the cold frame. That's no problem. They can all be in the same cold frame, but they must not be next to each other.
Okay. It's kind of getting complicated, but I think, you know, once you do it one time, it can be a little bit easier.
Yeah. If you follow the moon planting guide, where the names of the plants are given that will do well at that time, then those you will do first, and then you look only in your companion planting guide whether they are compatible or not, whether you can put them next to each other.
Okay,
yeah,
and
I've given the URL.
Yeah, I've given the URL to those folks who are in the live chat today.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we've got a head start on it. We understand a little bit about how to prepare the seeds, how to look at the sky and find a good time to plant, and those plants that are compatible with each other and assist each other in their growth. What else do we want to know about making either the vegetables, the plants, or flowers, or this preparing of the cold frame itself or the hotbed?
Well, I think we should have a little word about the cold frame. The cold frame has almost triangular side. It's like technically it's called the parallelepipedum. Yeah, it's got a bottom side and two uprights that go 90 degrees, but the back side must be at least twice as high as the front. Yeah. And then from the highest point on the backside, you cut diagonally across to the front. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you have
So it's almost looking like a triangle.
Yeah, it's almost looking like a triangle, and then you get the other side equal. Yeah. So you can, out of one wide piece, you can probably cut two sides, yeah, and then you have the back piece that is as high as the back side of the triangular piece, and the front side which is as low, and then you must make it according to the glass frame that you have, yeah, like an old window or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. I have seen on the internet a makeshift type of a cold frame where persons took cinder blocks to build the sides, and so those were supposedly more insulation around.
That is true. The cinder blocks give more insulation.
So it would be, now how do you fill in because cinder blocks are square and it would look like a stepping stone?
Well, cinder blocks you can fairly easily cut with a circular saw with a special blade.
Oh, I don't think I'm doing that. But maybe
no.
I could figure out a way to fill it in with soil or something.
Uh-huh. Well, you can also fill up these gaps, of course. Yeah, you have these square blocks, and you can fill up the gaps with cement. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, it becomes smooth.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
All right, what else do we need to know about preparing the cold frame? What about hinges? Does it necessarily need a hinge, or can it just be lifted?
It will be very easy if you have a hinge on the back, because, you know, when it gets too hot, you have to open them a little bit. Yeah. And in order to do that, you lift up the front part, and then you put a block between it, because otherwise it gets too hot, and then, you know, things can burn. Yeah, so when it is a nice day, yeah, and the wind doesn't blow straight into it, then you can open them up. Yeah, and then you lift it up, say, 10 centimeters, and you put something in between so that it's held open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you should make it, depending on how big is your garden. Some people have, say one window width is enough for their whole bit. But if you have more, then you have to put a few next to each other. Yeah,
well,
one long one. Yeah, with two, three, or four windows on top. And you hinge them on the back side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have some new information from Dr. Bob from North Carolina State University regarding making your cold frames from cinder blocks. And I think it's very important because I don't want to give misinformation. I want to make sure that people are preparing organic gardening and doing things that are good for their health. And therefore, he's not calling in, but I will repeat what he said here on the live chat. He said that cinder blocks are filled with radiation and that people can get lung cancer from living in a cinder block building, and that blocks are made of coal ash residue that contain radiation and radon. Therefore, we're going to nix that cinder block idea completely, even though I saw them doing it at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden as experimental this year. So I guess they didn't investigate that aspect of the component.
Yeah, neither have I.
So this is really important, and that's why we have our experts.
So then bricks will be better.
Bricks? Let's see if he says anything. I'm going to ask him, are bricks okay? I would imagine they would, because bricks are, he says, bricks are fine. Okay, we're going to make them out of bricks and toss those cinder blocks somewhere else. Okay, thank you so much for that information on
That's important, because you want to do things healthily. And
right. This is the whole idea of our show. So it's good that we have these people to give us this information about healthy materials in our lives and the environment and what we plant our food with. That goes also for the chemical impregnated wood that, you think that you're doing good by getting these logs that are rot resistant and making your borders around your garden with them, but they've got arsenic and other kinds of chemicals in there, so you really don't want to use them. It's going to go into your garden, and you don't want to eat it.
Yeah, the best thing is actually to use blank wood, and if you want to impregnate them, soak them in Danish oil. Yeah, and Danish oil, I don't mean the stuff that they smear on it with the brush, but an oil, a real oil. Because if you use oil, then they become weatherproof, they become waterproof. Yeah. You can also use beeswax instead.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can soak them in something like corn oil or canola oil, as long as it's not genetically modified. Yeah. Or you can use beeswax, and then you make the beeswax, you melt it, you make it very hot, and you just pour it over, and then it will soak into the wood, and it will make them weatherproof.
You know, I don't think any other show is going to give this kind of information. I think you've, you know, really why this show is great, because this is the only place you're going to hear these kinds of tips about organic gardening and really living in harmony with nature. And Dr. Bob has told us that treated wood logs for gardens are filled with copper arsenate and creosote, which are both carcinogenic. So
yeah,
we want to stay away from those treated logs.
Yes. You treat your own logs. You get blank logs that have not been treated. Yeah?
Right.
And then you soak them in there. Yeah, and
right.
If you want to use logs, that is good, of course, but then you need a lot of beeswax.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now,
paint the beeswax on the outside, and in the summer heat, the beeswax will melt and penetrate the wood by itself. And then, you know, uh-huh, once a week in the first year, if once a week in the summer you paint them in beeswax, then gradually after about a year, the whole log is saturated with it.
This means that we're going to have to start having beehives, because where else are we going to get the beeswax?
From a beekeeper, from an apiarist.
Right. Well, we're going to have to locate our local apiarist. And
yes,
we have about 2 minutes left on today's show. What do we want to leave final words on cold frames and preparing for spring? Do you want to just talk about looking in your catalog and selecting your finest, or do you want to tell us where to find organic seeds or something like that?
Organic seeds can be had from Eden Seeds in Australia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they sell organic seeds, and they sell the old varieties, which are self-seeding, so you don't have to buy seed each year.
Okay, self-seeding meaning that once you...
Self-seeding means that if you harvest, you let you leave two or three plants, and you let them go to seed.
Okay.
Yeah, and those seeds you can use the next year. And of the plants that you use for that purpose, use the biggest and the strongest. Yeah, although they may taste the best, they also give you the better seed. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So the biggest and the strongest of the plants you keep for seed. And the rest you can harvest for eating.
Okay.
And then
and
you let them go to seed, and as soon as the seeds are there, then you harvest the plants. Yeah, and you collect the seeds, and you keep them in a cool, dry place, away from the light. Yeah, in a cupboard, in boxes, in wooden boxes. Don't put them in plastic, because plastic is having softeners in them that may penetrate the seed and give you all kinds of other problems, because those are also carcinogenic.
Okay, so now I'm going to just close. Dr. Bob has said that castor oil is a great natural fungicide, and
yes,
many companies in the United States also sell organically grown non-GMO seeds. And we are out of time. I want to thank you. This was a fantastic show, very educational, and we're going to continue next Wednesday with how homeopathy helps grow great gardens with Kaviraj. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kaviraj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.